Welcome to the Closing Market Report. It's January the 10th, 2008. I'm Todd Gleason. In a few moments, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Dan Zwicker of ADM Grain Group. He's in Decatur, Illinois. And then we'll discuss the cash grain market with Bill Mayer at the Grain Elevator located in Lexington. In agricultural news, the chair of the House Committee on Agriculture says he has met five times since Christmas with the acting head of the USDA about the AGI. The Fed is expected to cut rates again at the end of the month. And Chinese officials for grain are projecting a 5 to 8% increase in 2008 acres planted to soybean. We'll have details of these and other stories shortly. And don't forget that just after the bottom of the hour, we always talk on Thursdays to meteorologist Peter Levin. He'll join us to take a complete look at the agricultural weather forecast right here on AM 580's Closing Market Report.
Hi, this is AM 580 Agriculture Director Dave Dickey. Join us this evening at the University Inn in Lafayette, Indiana, for another one of our free AM 580 Agricultural Outlook panels. Tonight's meeting gets underway at 7 p.m. Eastern Time. That's 6 o'clock Central. Panelists for the meeting include Mike Zuzulo and Chuck Shelby of Risk Management Commodities, as well as Tom Fritz of EFG in Chicago. That's at the University Inn in Lafayette, Indiana, this evening at 7 o'clock. No advance registration is required, and of course, the meeting is free. We hope to see you there.
Taking a look now at what happened in Chicago at the Board of Trade on this Thursday afternoon. Futures in the wheat pit finished like this. The March contract at $8.82.5, down 7 today. The May futures down a dime at $8.92.5. And July contract at $7.76 finished 15 cents lower. Corn futures March contract at $4.75, down 2.25. The May at $4.86.25, down 2.75. And July corn at $4.96, down 2.75. December contract at $4.93.25. Down 1.75 for the day. Soy complex, January beans, $12.44, a nickel lower. March contract at $12.60.25, down 2.25, and the May futures at $12.77.5, down 2.5 cents. November beans, $11.95, 11 cents higher on the afternoon. January soybeans down, or rather January soybean meal, down a dollar at $3.41.50. The March contract at $3.48.20, 20 cents lower. January bean oil, 15 higher at $50.85. The March contract at $51.27, 19 higher. Mercantile exchange numbers from the CME Group. February live cattle at $93.20, down 7.5 cents. April futures at $96 even, 12.5 cents higher. January feeder cattle at $101.75, $1.60 higher. The March contract up $1.37.5, 100 weight at $104.77.5. February lean hogs at $55.52.5, down $1. April futures 20 cents higher at $62.50. And the May contract for the lean hogs at $70.30, 40 higher on the afternoon. Outside markets for the day, trading the nearby February crude oil at $93.75 a barrel, down $1.92. The March contract 218 lower at 93.05. And the Dow Jones Industrial Average is just about 139 points higher at this hour at 12,873 for the day.
And services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Joining us now to take a look at what happened at the Chicago Board of Trade and the Mercantile Exchange is Dan Zwicker of the ADM Grain Group out of Decatur, Illinois. Good afternoon to you, Dan.
Good afternoon, Todd.
Well, we have lots of things that have been happening in the marketplace over the last month. A lot of volatility, a lot of moves, a lot of moves higher. And tomorrow it all comes to, well, the USDA's final crop production report for the 2007 season. What kind of numbers do you expect?
Well, what I do a lot of times is, of course, the number that's going to be the bottom line number here is going to be actually the quarterly stocks number, what USDA comes up with on December 1st. I mean, that basically tells us, you know, what our inventory is for the remainder of the year or as of December 1st. And what that number will do, it will help USDA by a process of elimination, finalize what our production number really is. Now, they can count, you know, USDA can count the crush, they can count exports when it comes to soybeans, so they can at least they'll have a, you know, the bean number should be fairly good, but there's always room for some changes as we go on down the road and once we get into the March report and maybe June report. Corn, you know, what they can explain, they put in residual feed use. Residuals hard to kind of put a number on because you just don't really know because you can't count the bushels. You can count what's crushed now for ethanol or what's grind for ethanol. We can count what we've exported. So the stocks numbers are going to be real important. Now, what I do, it's just kind of a poor man's approach to the market, is always watch what the prices do after those surveys supposed to have been taken. And these surveys should have been taken somewhere around late November, early December, because the stocks numbers will reflect as of December 1st. And when you look at that, you can see that the both corn and soybeans and even wheat futures from December 1 on has rallied strongly. Now, the wheat market here has gotten a little volatile here over the past 2 to 3 weeks, but you can see both the corn and soybean number trends have been solidly higher since that December first survey. So my bias is that the numbers are going to be supportive to the market. Now, in many cases, they may help explain why the market has rallied so strongly over the past 6 weeks, especially corn. It just basically went right through seasonal weakness that usually occurs during the last couple weeks of the year. So now, basically, if you look at seasonal patterns and average price patterns on corn, corn now has a backwind, and it just went right through that headwind like nothing here through December. So corn is actually seasonally in better shape, you know, to climb on higher as we go on through the winter months. Soybeans, not so much so. Soybeans still have a tendency to kind of go sideways to lower kind of into first part of February, but then again, then they get the backwind. So then we start climbing the seasonal strength in February and March and on into April. So, but my bias is, I suppose, looking at the way the market has performed since those surveys were taken, I would have to lean toward a supportive report.
Yeah, leaning towards a supportive report. How much upside potential do you think this is, there is in this marketplace? I think we talked last week, and we did a great deal of discussion.
Well, for all practical purposes, the corn did meet the first upside objective. I think we talked about last week was 484 and a quarter. We went to, what, 82 here today or yesterday, so we did come within a couple pennies of that. Depending upon, you know, which formations you want to use in that, I mean, you can read corn right on into, you know, this 530, 560, and then you can even talk about some $6 corn. But we don't have the fundamentals at this point known to do that. I think some of those upper end levels would have to come about because of maybe like a wet spring, something like that. Would that exaggerate or extenuate the trend that we see of trending toward more bean acres and trending away from corn acres? So if you got yourself into a wet spring like that, that would be the kind of a fundamental catalyst that could ratchet this corn onto the higher levels. But chart action looks awfully good. Whether or not you look at a daily chart, a weekly chart, or a monthly chart, it has a pretty good green light. And now Friday's, as soon as I say that, tomorrow morning USDA will knock me in the head, probably knock me dizzy here for a month or two. But the chart looks good. Now the soybeans, soybeans is probably a little more suspect, not quite as positive, and I think what that's reflecting is the expectations that we're going to see a big jump in acres in the U.S., but we still have a tight supply for this coming year, and South America is far from out of the woodwork, at least at this point. But technically, there's room in this soybean market to probably go up another buck or 75 cents anyway if they would get some bullishness either out of South America or if we ended up with maybe a little more positive number out of tomorrow's report.
What do you think a decent cash strategy for corn is at this point for the old crop when you're pushing, I don't know, $4.50 cash price in some places?
Well, I've never been a real advocate of using puts and calls because they're hard to make work when you're toying around with $2.25 corn or $5.50 beans or $6 beans. But with the type of price levels that we're at in corn, $4.50 on the cash, we're, you know, $11 on the soybeans, we can afford now, I think, to use puts and calls more in our marketing strategy. And I guess I'm kind of in the opinion that the market, I think the uncertainties of acres and weather patterns and demand and all that, I think, are generally supportive influences as we go on into the growing season. So I guess I would take a look at, you know, maybe protecting my downside, but leaving the door open to capitalize maybe on further price strength if we get ourselves into weather problems and whatnot as we go on into the growing season.
So which one are you going to put on paper and which one are you going to protect?
Well, I think producers should lock them in with their individual elevators and put puts and calls onto their cash contracts. You can embed puts and calls into your cash contracts. That way a lot of producers don't have to come up with additional outlays. It is just put into the contract, and the cost of that put or call or whatever strategy they wanted to embed into their cash contract, that's subtracted out at that time of that contract's initiated. So, you know, you can attach a put to it that protects a floor to you, but it also gives you still unlimited upside potential and another opportunity to sell it at a higher price level if things do. But it also does protect some of your profit. I think we're managing profit here protecting risk. I don't like risk. That's kind of a negative connotation. I think, you know, when we're looking at these kind of levels, we're managing profit. So I can see protecting some of that profit or taking some of that profit off the table so we don't lose it all if we get a bad hand dealt to us at some point in time. And I think you can do that with puts embedded in cash contracts.
Dan, with that, we'll let you go.
Very well.
Thanks much. Dan Zwicker is with ADM Grain Group out of Decatur, Illinois. I kind of like that term. We're managing profit rather than protecting risk. So let's manage some profit and take a look at what's been happening in the world of agricultural weather. We'll do that at the bottom of the hour with Pete Levitt, meteorologist. Here's what the forecast looks like for Champaign-Urbana tonight. Cloudy, a chance of rain in the evening, then a chance of light snow or light rain after midnight. Lows this evening in Champaign around 30. West winds at 15 to 20 miles an hour. The chance of precipitation about 50% this evening. Cloudy skies tomorrow. A chance of flurries. Highs in the upper 30s. West winds at 10 to 15 miles an hour. And tomorrow night, mostly cloudy skies. Lows in the upper 20s. Light south winds. Saturday, mostly cloudy. High in the upper 30s. South winds at 5 to 10 miles an hour. Dave Dickey is here now to take a look at today's agricultural news.
In agricultural news, analysts who watch the Federal Reserve widely believe the Fed will cut interest rates at its next policy-setting meeting on January 30th. Fed Fund Futures managers are projecting a half-point cut, but analysts also say if there is a surge in this week's Consumer Price Index figures, the Fed may cut only a quarter point. The Fed is facing a difficult decision. Lowering interest rates will do nothing at this point to reduce inflation, which is becoming a more significant near-term issue for Wall Street. House Agriculture Committee Chairman Colin Peterson says he's met five times since Christmas with USDA Acting Secretary Chuck Connor to discuss the pending farm bill.
We're continuing to press them to try to get someplace close on payment limits and revenue, which are the two things that they're strung out about. The payment limit thing is a lot bigger deal with them than I think that people realize, so we're working through that. they want to go considerably further than either the House or Senate went, which causes trouble with the Southerners. So we're plugging away, but we're a long ways apart. And if anybody thinks this is going to be easy, they're kidding themselves.
Peterson says lowering the adjusted gross income limit for farm subsidies to $200,000 would affect 15,000 farmers. Connor says subsidy payments need to go to active farmers and not to passive investors. Peterson says he and Connor have discussed changing the definition of a farm and harmonizing income restrictions on subsidies and conservation payments. Peterson says the White House has greater objections to the Senate version of the farm bill.
There's some real problems. There's a huge increases in spending in that bill, which are terminated after 5 years. The administration is much more opposed to the Senate bill than they are the House bill because of the way it's financed.
A huge gap remains between lawmakers and the administration on nutrition and fruits and vegetables. The White House proposed increasing funding by $600 million over 10 years. The House bill calls for $11.1 billion over 10 years. Industry officials say Mexico could see a 5% jump in tortillas prices by the end of the month. The head of Mexico's Corn Flour Producers Association says tortilla producers are going to have to raise prices to compensate for increased costs of gas, electricity, and salaries. And Chinese grain officials are projecting the PRC will increase soybean acres by 5 to 8% this year, but that won't decrease the country's dependency on soybean imports. The government is planning on providing soybean producers additional subsidies this year. And that's a look at today's agricultural news.
Thanks, Dave. Dave Dickey, of course, your Director of Agricultural Programming here at the WILL radio stations. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason, the host of the Closing Market Report and Commodity Week, reminding you to join me next week, all week long, for the Corn and Soybean Classic Series. We'll hit the road on Monday at Wren Lake in southern Illinois. Kickoff is about 8:15 a.m. in the morning. It's a great program with the crop extension specialist and ag economist from the U of I presenting their look at the marketplace and the world of agriculture. It all happens during the Corn and Soybean Classic Series, Wren Lake on Monday, Tuesday in Springfield, Wednesday at the Iowa Wireless Center in Moline, Thursday in Malta at Kishwaukee College, and we'll wrap up Friday at the Interstate Center in Bloomington. Visit the IPM website for complete details, www.ipm.uiuc.edu, and click on Conferences, or just search Google for Corn and Soybean Classic. Well, up next, as you know, farmer-funded research is very important to the land-grant university system. I'll have more on why the money referred to as checkoff dollars has become so very valuable. Those checkoff dollars, says Brian Deers, make up the very foundation of how agricultural research at the University of Illinois gets done. He says that's because they are a very, very stable form of funding.
Most of our research dollars are coming from the commodity groups, and that's been very helpful. It's been very stable, and that allows us to hire staff that stays on for long periods of time and gain experience and are therefore much more effective. So having this research dollars from the checkoffs, it really forms the core of our programs and allows us to get things accomplished.
Taxpayer dollars, of course, are important in the grand scheme of research funding, but they come and go so often that Deers says it's very hard to do continuous research when those are the only funding source.
That's right. It allows us to have the staff and have the continuous work so that we can work on these long-term problems year after year.
The continuous work is done with farmer-funded checkoff dollars. These are monies collected at the first point of sale of a commodity like pork or beef or corn and, yes, soybeans. Brian Heiser is a farmer from Minier, Illinois, and chairs a committee for the Illinois Soybean Association. He helps decide how the checkoff dollars are spent.
I think probably one of the most important things that farmers should be proud of their investments through the checkoff is the programs such as the VIPS program, in which we give information back to farmers, unbiased information about disease, cyst nematode, and other things that farmers just can't get otherwise. We also do research in soybean diseases that it's awfully expensive, and private industry will help take some of the germplasm that we develop, but they do not go and they are not doing some of the research that we are able to do and put into germplasm, and then they will use germplasm that we develop, such as aphid resistance and some of those kinds of things that we develop.
Heiser contends this is because the university system, not just the U of I, but land grant and public institutions around the nation, are really trying to learn new things about animals and plants, like the soybean. The checkoff dollars allow the research to continue and can focus that research on farm-level applications. For University of Illinois Extension, I'm Todd Gleason.
The Closing Market Report is made possible by AgriGold Hybrids, funding agricultural programming as an additional service to the many AgriGold customers in the AM 580 listening area. AgriGold, the corn specialists. More information is at agrigold.com or at 800-262-7333.
Time to take a look at the cash grain market on a Thursday afternoon. Bill Mayer of Roach Ag Marketing out of Lexington, Illinois, joins us. Good afternoon to you, Bill.
Good afternoon, Todd.
An awful lot of water and rainfall around the state of Illinois, and certainly should be flooding several areas. Does that have much of an impact on what's been able to move up and down the river system?
Yeah, that's really probably the exception on the bean side of things. Soybean basis has been, in general, been weaker for the last week or so. You know, prices continue to move higher and cause movement both from the farmer and the elevator. But the exception to that is we did see a pretty good pop in the river, the Gulf basis, the last day or so here due to the high water along the Illinois and the fact they can't get barges loaded. But it's a fairly temporary situation, I think.
Short-lived as things crest, and then we begin to get that river back down to more normal levels.
Right. The other thing that the weather might impact is I think it's probably created a little bit more of an urgency in getting some of these piles picked up, not only just the rain, but this, you know, 50, 60-degree weather that we had the last 10 days. I think that probably make some of the ground piles a little bit more concerning for the operators that have those out there.
I was thinking we had most of those picked up, but maybe we have most of the big ones picked up, and it would be of greater concern. The smaller the pile, I think that the more concerned they'd have to be with rainfall and the heat both.
Yeah, and I agree with you. I think we have most of that done, and it's probably not a big deal. We are seeing the central part of the Corn Belt, the corn base is a little bit softer in the west, and in the east we've seen it a little bit stronger, actually, and that's just kind of traditional. I mean, our farmers here in the central part of the Corn Belt tend to want to move the grain a little bit earlier, and this January movement is just kind of a traditional situation that causes that disparity there a little bit.
And what are your bids for the day?
Corn is $4.47, beans $12.
Bill, we appreciate you being with us.
Thank you.
Bill Mayer, Roach Ag Marketing out of Lexington, Illinois, joins us here on the Closing Market Report each and every Thursday afternoon to take a look at what's been happening in the world of cash grain. Beans at $12. There's a number you can only hope that you hear a few more times, can't you? Up next, your regional newscast, and then we'll talk about the agricultural weathercast.
With this look at AM 580 News, I'm Tom Rogers. Flooding has forced the residents of more than 400 homes to evacuate in Iroquois and Livingston counties. The hardest hit areas are Pontiac and Watseka. State Emergency Management Agency spokeswoman Patty Thompson says residents who didn't have friends or family to stay with last night were put up at a church in Watseka and a recreation center in Pontiac, and those facilities are still open. A spokeswoman for the church says a stream of volunteers and donations has come in, and people are using a one-month-old addition to the church to bed down for the time being. Emergency management head Andrew Velasquez is meeting with local officials in Livingston and Iroquois counties and touring flooded areas today. The governor has declared the two counties state disaster areas. A judge has found that a homeless Champaign man was insane when he shot two police officers from his car at Westside Park last summer. Judge Heidi Ladd handed down a not guilty by reason of insanity verdict for Donnell Clemens after a brief bench trial this morning. The 47-year-old man was also injured in the shootout that injured the officers, as well as a third man who was involved in the incident, the third officer. Champaign County State's Attorney Julia Reed says a psychiatrist determined that Clemens suffers from chronic paranoid schizophrenia and should be committed to a state mental health facility. His attorney says Clemens may not have gotten treatment if he had been sentenced to prison. Reed says it's possible that Clemens may never be released. Another plan to provide a large aid package for mass transit in the Chicago area is now in the governor's hands, but how soon riders may see help remains unclear. The state Senate voted 30-25 for the plan that would raise sales and real estate taxes in the Chicago area to stave off major service cuts, layoffs, and fare increases set for later this month. The same plan had failed last night. The bill then narrowly won approval in the House within the last hour. Lawmakers abandoned demands that a transportation bailout be tied to a statewide construction program. It now goes to Governor Blagojevich, who has vowed to veto or change the bill. He prefers a House plan that would divert state gasoline sales taxes for transit needs. The head of the National Air Traffic Controllers Association says Chicago, Atlanta, New York, and Southern California are in a staffing emergency. Experienced air traffic controllers are retiring, and the union leader says the remaining veterans can no longer safely handle peak traffic volumes in Chicago and other high-traffic areas. I'm Tom Rogers, AM 580 News.
I'm Todd Gleason, AM 580 Agriculture. Time now to talk about the agricultural weather forecast. Pete Labatt joins us on a Thursday afternoon. Thanks for being with us today, Pete.
Yes, good afternoon, Todd.
A lot of rainfall around here over the last week, and some flooding still occurring in the central parts of Illinois.
That's true, and they're getting aggravated a little bit by some activity today, a few bands of showers moving across the state, and then I think a more general area of precipitation currently over southern Iowa and northern Missouri will sweep eastward across the state. Mostly rain at the outset, but the low-pressure center now, which is centered just northwest of St. Louis, moves northeastward across the state. It'll pull colder air down. And so these temperatures we see now, which are in the upper 30s to mid-40s across the state, will drop sharply this evening and tonight, and we'll be back below freezing. And that means that we might see some of this activity change over to snow, especially north of I-70 this evening and tonight, before ending tomorrow. So that gets us through one day, and then we've got one more episode of showers due along about late Sunday. That goes by, and then I think the mild weather is about done. We're going to see sharply colder temperatures come in toward the latter end of next week and for the latter half of the month.
And for the latter half of the month. So, but that would be fairly normal and typical for this month of January.
Oh, yes. We're running well above normal now the month. As a matter of fact, I think today is going to come in about 15 degrees above normal in parts of central Illinois. So the cold air will be first to return to normal. But I think we're going to see some bone-chilling cold, as they call it, toward the latter half of the month.
Does that mean we'll be in the zeros, below zero?
We're going to break the zero mark, go down below zero when we see some of this very cold air due later in the month, come down through the plains and make it into Illinois as well.
And boy, that is just awfully cold. Let's let's turn to warmer temperatures. I don't like to think about below zero.
That's, I don't either, frankly.
Everything just freezes up when that happens. Let's go to South America and tell me about their crop.
Okay, well, it's been a little too dry in the Argentine over the last couple of weeks. They had a little moisture to break up some drought there earlier, but now it's turned dry again, and it's been hot and dry, so a moisture deficit in Argentina is putting stress on the summer crops down there. Up in Brazil, the past week had some pretty good showers in southern Brazil, keeping the crop in good shape there, but the central west areas further north and west were dry, but now they're going to see the rain this coming week as it dries out in southern Brazil. So if you put that all together, you get a pretty good pattern for Brazil weather, episodes of dryness and then good moisture. But the Argentine, I think, is on the dry side, and I think we're going to see some problems there with dryness if they don't get any rain. There's none in the forecast for them.
And then maybe better check in on China, see how they're doing over the wintertime. The Chinese now expecting that they're going to plant 6 to 8% more soybean acres in the coming year. So they'll be looking for good weather and good replenishment of moisture levels.
Well, so far, so good. This has not been a bad winter in China. It's been wet in the south and southeast in Asia, but back up into China, it's been about normal. Their chance of cold weather is going to come again later in the month and next month, but I so far I'd say it's a pretty good start for China. Compared with a lot of other areas which are seeing extremes which are sometimes detrimental, China so far has escaped most of that.
We appreciate you being with us today, Pete.
Okay, it's my pleasure.
Pete Levitt, meteorologist, joins us here on the Closing Mark Report. Happens each and every Thursday afternoon.
Today's broadcast is made possible with support from First Midwest Bank, serving the banking needs of Illinois' agricultural community with locations in Champaign, Danville, Galesburg, Morris, and McHenry. More information is available from Chip Jorstad in Champaign at 217-378-7633. First Midwest Bank, member FDIC, an equal housing lender.
And that is today's Closing Mark Report. Be sure to tune in tomorrow morning at 8:50 a.m. Dave Dickey will bring you your pre-opening market report, your first look, real look at what's been happening in the world of agriculture, and tomorrow morning's USDA reports. They'll be released at 7:30 a.m. If you have not signed up for our weekend newsletter, if you do that this evening, we'll make sure to deliver those reports to your email address by about 8 o'clock, I suppose, as close as I can get them to 7:30 in the morning. Thanks much for listening. I'm Todd Gleason.